Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, hour number four, Derek Mason, Braden Gall. Hal Gill coming up in about 30 minutes from now. Of course, the Predators back on the ice tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks. I started this show, Derek, a long time ago with Jason Fitz, and we could not, we tried for a year and a half to figure out a nickname for the Blackhawks that was like both funny and sort of like insulting all at the same time, and we could probably, we like literally could never do it. So maybe we should start that up again. I don't know. Maybe we should start that up and see if our audience can help us out with that. We need a really good nickname for the Chicago Blackhawks. I think I called them Communists for a while, and I don't know if that. I don't think it stuck. I don't think it was very good.
I don't think it stuck.
I don't think it was very good. Tennessee Titans against the Ravens Saturday night 7:15, and I studied a lot of. I was looking at this yesterday, and I was what worked against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, and when you watch stuff from the Chargers game in the playoffs last year, when the Chargers did a very good job against Lamar Jackson, forced him to be a passer, and did not make a lot of big plays, and the Chargers went into Baltimore and won that playoff game. And then you look this year at the Chiefs, who are, you know, the Browns game, you sort of just, I almost throw the Browns game out because the Browns are just so weird and bizarre and poorly coached and managed and, you know, whatever. I just kind of throw that one out. But you can watch the Chiefs game and you can learn some stuff, right? You can learn coverages, the way they use Tyrann Mathieu in coverage. Disguised coverages and gap discipline defense, I know it sounds like cliches, but you're going to need a great, great job from Casey, Jones, and Simmons up front, because they have to be able to two-gap occasionally. They have to stop the dive play on the option. They have to read their keys. They have to stay disciplined, all that stuff. The outside backers have to play the option really well. But Dean Pees is a master of disguising defenses. It worked against Tom Brady last week. It's worked for his entire career. Does he have the ability, whether it's creepers, whether it's safeties in the box, whether it's rolling this, whether it's, you know, the faking zone, turning it into man, vice versa, zone blitz scheme? I don't know what it is, Derek. You tell me what the strategy should be. But Dean Pees is about as good as it gets when it comes to disguising coverages, and I think you've got to try to confuse Lamar Jackson pre-snap.
Yeah, you have to. I think you take that Charger game and you throw it out the window. That game has no relevance to how you prepare for Lamar Jackson, because that was a system under Marty Mordenrigg that didn't fit Lamar Jackson and his skill set. And even in that game, when Lamar just started to be a dynamic player in the second half, where he just seemed to, you know what, forget this. I'm just going to go out and I'm going to play. They almost came back and won that game because of him alone. So you got to take that game. You got to throw it out the window. Now, the Kansas City game, they still put up 28 points. Now, he, as far as, you know, as far as completion ratio, he was, you know, right around 50%. You know, he threw the ball 43 times. They don't want him to throw the ball 43 times. They want him to be also in that 25, 27 times, maybe not even that much. You know, so when you say how do we game plan against Lamar Jackson? Well, the game plan is, because no one's been able to do it to this offense. Because if you stop Lamar Jackson, remember, they got Gus Edwards and they got Mark Ingram in the backfield. If Mark Ingram does play, and I think
that's
he
a big
will,
question mark.
Yeah, he will try to give it a go at least. Even if you stop Lamar Jackson, you got to stop those two running backs. And you got to stop that offensive line from mauling you down. That's the problem with stopping Tennessee. Even if you stop, you know, you got to stop Derrick Henry one, but then you got to get penetration on that offensive line, who's blocking really well at this point in the season as far as run blocking. So there are things you can try to do defensively, and DPs. If I'm going to have anyone that would be a guy to try to go against his defense, it would be Dean Pees.
Right.
But I just think it's a tall task for anybody that plays this team. Because if you stop Lamar Jackson from running, they got Mark Ingram. If you stop Mark Ingram, well, they got Gus Edwards. They have several different ways. That's what makes them so dynamic. They have several different ways to beat you running the ball. It's not just the quarterback, even though the quarterback is the guy that, because he has the ball in his hands at all times, you have to limit his ability to make big plays. But Mark Ingram makes big plays. Gus Edwards, he makes big plays. And people tend to forget about those guys because those guys are the guys that run up the gut. Those guys that go between tackle to tackle that just wears you down. And Ingram is a physical runner. That's what New Orleans missed, is that physical runner presence that Ingram gave him. So, you know, play your assignments. Be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. And make the tackle. That's all the Tennessee Titans can do. And hope for
keep it on front of you.
And hope for a turnover. That's all you can do, because it's not like you are better. You're not better. Your defense is not better than our offense. It's just not. But what you can do is, you know, be in a position to make the tackle and make it.
Yeah.
We could say that to Baltimore, be in a position to make the tackle. Well, New England was in a position to make a tackle, and they didn't make them.
No, they did not want to tackle Derrick Henry at the end of that game. And it's which is what Derrick Henry and that offense wants to do to everybody, is by the end of it, you know, the 3-yarder in the second quarter turns into the 6-yarder in the third quarter, turns into the 12-yarder in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden he's ripping off chunks. Now, as it so happened, he was ripping off chunks on the first drive against the New England Patriots, and you can tell they were sort of, you know, oh man, we got to deal with this all game long. But it was the defense that won that game. I mean, Brady was confused in the second half. You know, their drive chart was punt, 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 you know, whatever. Like, they didn't. I just don't think you're going to win a game 14-13 against Baltimore. It's just not going to happen. So the offense, as Rex Rode made two really good points earlier in the show, of course, when he was with us, brought to you by Holly Gerritsen, your local Geico agent. I think the two points he made is Belichick was going to take away the big play action pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Baltimore can do what New England did in that situation. It's possible. You seem to think that you sort of like Baltimore's defense better than New England. I think New England, from a personnel standpoint, matched up well in the secondary. I think A.J. Brown can beat Marcus Peters. I think Stephon Gilmore is way better than Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters doesn't scare me as much. I know he makes a lot of plays, but he takes a lot of risks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to have to the play-action passing game from Tannehill, Brown, Davis, Janu, whatever, it's going to have to make more plays. Because I assume that they will do a better job, Baltimore, than New England at stopping Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're going to let him go for 185 yards.
No, they're not. They're going to try their best to, you know, rally around the football and tackle Derrick Henry. They were able to do that last year, rally around the football and tackle Derrick Henry. And they feel, you know, they're going to go back and they feel that they can do that again. It's a mindset. It's an attitude. I don't think the New England Patriots had that mindset or attitude that they knew they were going to have to consistently hit Derrick Henry, and they was in it for the long haul. I think Baltimore is in it for the long haul. I think they're in it for the long haul on the defense. Now, whether that works for either team from a defensive standpoint, I don't know. But I think both teams are built to remain physical throughout the whole game. They're not going to pull a New England and say, you know what, we don't feel like tackling Ingram anymore. He's just burling down. Or we don't feel like tackling Derrick Henry anymore.
Right.
They're not. These two teams are not built that way. They're going to keep coming at you from a defensive standpoint. But it goes back to, just because you're coming at me, you know, doesn't mean you're going to stop me. I remember Jeff Fisher saying long ago, they know, everybody in the building knows that we're going to run the football 4th-and-1, or 1st-and-goal at the 1.
Right.
Everybody in the building knows we're going to run the football. They know that we know that they know that we know we're going to run the football. Okay? But can they stop us?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Can they stop
us? I've always said this, too. It's the most demoralizing thing in the game. I think in any sport, one of the most demoralizing things in all of sports is when you know the other team is about to run the football to try to win a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's coming, and you line up to stop it, and you can't stop it. That is the most demoralizing, because then what else are you left with?
Nothing.
Because the biggest part of football is deception.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest part of football that leads to success is, I mean, yes, coaching, athletic ability, blah, 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 whatever. But from a play calling standpoint, it's about deception, right? It's disguising your coverages on defense. It's about, you know, taking shots when you're not expecting it on offense. It's running a screen pass when the other team's being aggressive because you're going to play off that aggressiveness, which is what the Patriots actually did very well early in that game against the Titans defense, right? Is they went to the screen game and it worked really well. So deception and guesswork and everything like that is so important in the game of football. And the most demoralizing thing you can possibly do is when that guesswork is completely out the window. And it's just, look, here's what we're going to do, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Try and stop us. I'm going to move you from point A to point B, and you're going to try to stop me from doing that, and you can't do it. I don't know how it doesn't get any more demoralizing than that. And that's what Derrick Henry can do to people. I don't know if they're going to – the problem with that, though, is you have to be in the game or in the lead.
Exactly.
You can't fall behind. If you fall behind – that's the problem. And here's the weird thing about the Titans with that situation. They scored first against they scored a first touchdown against New England, but they held New England with a field goal, which is big. They scored the first couple of touchdowns against the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work. Houston scored the first couple of times the times they played.
Mm-hmm.
That was huge in the first game they played Houston. You've got to get off to a fast start so that you can keep Derrick Henry involved in the game plan for 30 plus carries.
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, this is a tall order. And I'm not sure how many Titans fans are in the same place mentally this week as we were last week.
No, you're absolutely right. So,
yeah.
I don't see either way, because I'm listening to people saying, well, Derrick Henry's going to run the football. Derrick Henry's going to run the football. And, you know, he's going to have a big day, yada, yada, yada. And then on the flip side, I just got a feeling they're going to stop that running game. If they hit Lamar Jackson, they'd be fine. Mm. No, they're not going to be fine, because, again, they have more than one guy that can run the football effectively. You know,
and more than one tight end.
If they hit Derrick Henry and stop, the Titans can't do anything else, because Derrick Henry is that guy.
Yeah.
Well, if you hit Lamar Jackson, go ahead. I mean, he has Mark Ingram that he can pitch the ball to, or Edwards that he can get a ball to, or the tight ends that he can throw it to.
Yeah.
So it's not just – you want to key on Lamar, but it's not just Lamar.
Yeah, and without Derrick Henry, the play action doesn't work as
well. Exactly.
And that's why it's all tied a little bit more to one guy for the Titans. And Lamar Jackson, let's be honest, has changed the way we view football, but not because of his skill. You can't just go find another Lamar Jackson.
Mm-mm.
He's changed the way people are thinking about the game from a coaching standpoint. They're starting to look at things that they never would have thought of using – these 23 sets and these, you know, 21 personnel and, you know, the pistol option. Like, again, the pistol offense was invented by Chris Ault at Nevada like 20 years ago. No one's ever used, like Kaepernick used that under Greg Roman. And that's what they're doing again with him. Now, Kaepernick actually, you know, he was a part of those teams that was running the pistol in college. So it's old schemes and new schemes mixed together. And so it's the creativity that I love watching, and it is very, very hard to stop. There is a college national championship game and a bunch of college news around the SEC. We'll get to that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The United Structural System is the foundation and repair and roof, waterproofing company that has served the Middle Tennessee area since 1994. We have more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers. And here are a few of the company's highlights. Quality is great. Reputation is great. Expertise, they have it. Integrity, most definitely. And these are their selling points. I mean, listen, a company that has a free estimate when they come out, they're a locally owned establishment. They don't have a bunch of stores everywhere around the country. Foundation and waterproofing company, again, they've served the Middle Tennessee area since 1994. They are licensed and insured. This is not a franchise. Custom solution to meet homeowners' needs. And here's the trademark. We guarantee our best, so call USS. So here's the phone number to make that call. 615-227-2275. 615-227-2275. Or go to the website, USSTN.com.
We got a couple of Predators tickets to give away here pretty soon. So we will do that coming up next segment. So don't go anywhere. We'll have a trivia question for you guys for a couple of tickets to, I believe, the Ducks game coming up with the
quack.
You're ridiculous. No, I know what it is. I read kids' books every night, Derek. I have to make the farm animal sounds all the time. I'm like, which one is this? So we'll give away some tickets to the Preds coming up in just a few minutes. Hal Gill going to join us next segment as well. Some rapid-fire college football news because, first of all, this national championship game, like, do people realize it's going to happen on Monday? Like that LSU, like the Joe Burrow, like Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence, like arguably the greatest quarterback national championship game maybe ever.
I had no idea
is going to happen on Monday night, and I'm not sure it's been talked about by anybody anywhere ever. I don't understand.
See
why it's the 2 week layoff. Obviously,
it's funny because it's getting pushed back for everything, even on the national level now. Because the biggest story in college was Tua for the first couple days for Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday it was back to NFL stuff.
Well, and now Baylor and Mississippi State are still hiring coaches.
Yeah. But then it was about the coaching hires and the NFL. And
Right. Black Monday or whatever it is for all the coaches to get fired. Mike McCarthy sleeping over at Jerry Jones's house and, whatever. All this crazy stuff is happening. And it does feel like it's just sneaking up on us. And, I can't wait because I think it's going to be an exceptional football game. But I don't know about you guys. I'm ecstatic about it. Jake Fromm also announced that he is going pro, leaving Georgia early, along with a bunch of other guys on that offense, DeAndre Swift and a few others. Derek, I'll go rapid fire here with you because Tennessee got a bunch of good news. I don't know. Can Jake Fromm make his game better if he comes back? I feel like he regressed this year. I feel like another year would do him well, but could he change his draft profile if he comes back and has a really good season, or is he just is what he is at this point?
I think he is what he is. He may get a little better in the underneath, being coached by an NFL quarterbacks coach or offensive coordinator. He can get a little better, but I think he is who he is. And not to say that he can't have a productive or really good NFL career, because he can. I'm not going to sit here and say that, but I don't think, to him it made any sense, especially when Swift is leaving and they got other guys that are leaving on that team. And he's stuck again with a bunch of younger guys that he has to, he has to work with. And not to say that's a bad thing, but, he wants to win and he wants to go to a national championship. And then maybe they don't have the defense that they had last year. So
see, I think their defense is going to be sick next year.
Yeah. That
and they had a couple of young, Cager and then George Pickens was a freshman. They had some young players.
But you're still working with young players. And it's like, he's like, listen, if I'm going to get better, if I'm going to learn, I'd rather learn at the professional level.
That makes sense.
It's
hard to argue with that angle, but I don't know. I feel like he regressed and it hurt his draft style.
Of course. I think he did too.
So,
but then who else are you going to get, though? That's the question, because we already know that it's going to be Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow. Not in this order, obviously.
Oh, you mean in the draft?
Yeah, in the draft.
Oh, I think there's
because I think Bryce Love is kind of in that conversation.
Oh, Jacob Eason is going to be. I think there are two first-round picks. I think it's Tua and Burrow, and that's it. I don't think anybody else is worthy. Now, Herbert is going to be.
I think Herbert is going to get in the first round.
Herbert's going to be taken in the first round, but I don't know if I think he's worthy. I don't think Eason's worthy, but he's got a huge arm.
He's a big guy.
Huge arm.
That's crazy.
Who ironically got.
Exactly. That would be crazy if he gets drafted before Fromm, and he was the reason he left Georgia.
And Fields will get drafted next year ahead of where Jake Fromm probably gets drafted this year.
Yeah.
And if they were in the same draft class right now, Fields would probably go ahead of Fromm. So again, this is why I always understand the decision to go make money, right? Because you're not making it right now, which is why Trey Smith's announcement today, I believe coming up at noon, a guy who's dealt with some major health issues, like a serious health issue, like blood clots, that to me, it makes zero financial sense for Trey Smith to come back in the middle of his best earnings potential right after his best season. It makes no sense for Trey Smith to not start making money playing football because he never knows when that's going to be taken away from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a position right now where he's worked his tail off to get back. And, you never know when this blood clot thing is going to pop up again. And, if you choose to come back, then great. But then you run the risk of if it pops up again, you're falling further down draft boards, even if you get drafted anyway. that year if it happens again.
It's a health risk
today.
Yeah,
so you might as well. Trey, I mean, I would tend to lean toward him leaving. And again, sort of like Jake Fromm, you know, if it's going to happen, I would rather it happen while I'm in the NFL and making money and doing what I love doing. You know, so
you got a little insurance.
Exactly. So
that now the good news for Tennessee, if they do lose Trey Smith today, is Cade Mays, of course, the 5-star offensive lineman who played for Georgia the last couple of seasons, and I believe was a freshman starting in the national championship game, plays with a lot of edge, has that like sort of killer instinct. His father played at Tennessee. He was a big Tennessee miss in recruiting. I believe that was Butch Jones's final class, and he is announcing he is going to transfer back to Tennessee. That would give them Wright, Morris, and Mays as 3 5-star players playing on their offensive line next year. And if Trey Smith stays, of course, that'd be a fourth, which would make the job for whoever plays quarterback in Tennessee that much easier, assuming that's Jared Garantano. They're going to have to replace some receivers, but that's some good news for the University of Tennessee. Now, I know the coaching staff for Tennessee, they've got to replace their running backs coach who's going to Florida State. It looks like Jay Graham. If they're going to go outside the program, Jay Graham is an option, who's the running backs coach at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Obviously played at Tennessee. He's a top candidate. And they've got another guy on staff from the football operations department that could be elevated as well. But so they've got some coaching staff stuff they got to work out. But basically, there's, you know, once Trey Smith makes his decision, it's sort of all smooth sailing for Tennessee after that into signing day and then into spring practice with a lot of momentum. So Cade Mays coming home. And if you missed the recruiting story, this is crazy. So on his final visit, 5 days before committing or signing with Georgia, Cade Mays, his father loses his finger like in a chair or something.
Ooh.
It like shoots across the room, and Sam Pittman at the time, who's the offensive line coach at Georgia at the time, picks up Cade Mays' father's finger, puts it on ice to they could give it to the doctor and like go get it like, I guess, reattached.
Oh my
now
goodness.
Sam Pittman is the Arkansas head football coach. So the story is, long story short, the Arkansas head football coach picked up Cade Mays' father's finger on a recruiting visit to Georgia, and Georgia still got Cade Mays 5 days later to sign. Now, of course, he's going back to Tennessee because his little brother, a third Mays, is going to play at Tennessee in 2020. So
it's kind of cool that he gets to play with his brother, but not the finger thing.
What a weird story. Yeah. And now the dad is suing Georgia and the chair company.
Are you serious?
Yes. It is the most SEC recruiting story that any story could ever be.
I can see him suing the chair company, but why sue Georgia?
I don't know.
Chair company, yes.
Because it was on their watch or something. It was in their facility. Again, how good a recruiter are you? You know, okay, I'm recruiting DJ to come play for University of Braden Gall. All right, he's coming to play for me at my school. And you're there with DJ, and you lose a finger. And I still convince DJ to come to my school. How good a recruiter do you have to be?
Really good. You must have did the surgery to attach the finger
Kirby,
back on.
What is Kirby putting in the water?
You know what'll help that missing finger? An SEC championship.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I got no finger to put the ring on. But I'll give you the ring. What a wild day in the SEC. And then, oh, by the way, Mike Leach could be a candidate for the job at Mississippi State.
Oh, Leach.
Please, God.
Please let it happen. Please let it happen. Well, if there is truly a football God out there, please let it happen. Please.
what a couple of days in the SEC. And, oh, by the way, the thing we all should be talking about, no one's talking about, which is LSU and Clemson on Monday night, which I still cannot wait for.
LSU.
Is that a game? That's this week?
Is that basketball?
Basketball?
Oh, snaps. That should be good.
Wow, Will Wade's really doing a good job with that if they're already...
Yeah, Will Wade's doing something.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know how that man is still employed, by the way. Nashville zone. Will Wade.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Will Wade.
I honestly do not know. They beat Tennessee or whatever over the weekend. I honestly do not know how Sean Miller at Arizona and Will Wade are still employed. I don't know how... Like, I know we live in a culture where we can literally say something 1 minute and then the next minute say to everybody, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I know that we live in that world, but it's just like Arizona and LSU are just like, no, it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, Wade hit him with the shaggy. It wasn't me.
I mean, while he got busted.
Yeah, wasn't me. Like,
it wasn't me.
He was busted with the biscuit, and it wasn't me.
Yeah, it wasn't me. I had the biscuit, but it wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
I don't know.
I ain't even had no butter with it. What do you mean?
People can just go on TV these days and just say, no, that didn't happen. And like, no, man, I saw it happen.
No, it didn't.
Here's footage of you
doing it.
No, doing
that's
it.
Not
well,
me.
Wait, no,
that
no.
Me. Wasn't me.
Who's that? He starts looking like closely, like squinting his eyes. No, nope,
the film's kind of grainy. Yeah. No, it's in HD, Will. No, that's still not me.
No, it wasn't me.
4K, Will. No, that's still not me.
And it ain't just sports, boys.
Yeah.
Hal Gill and some free Preds tickets when we come back right here on Morning Drive. We will have a pair of Preds tickets to give away just a few minutes against the Ducks Thursday, January 16th at Bridgestone Arena. Derek Mason, Braden Gall joining us here now on the program, of course, is Hal Gill, brought to you by Puckett's. How are you, Hal? How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Fantastic this morning.
So we got a chance to talk to new coach John Hines earlier today. And listen, it doesn't make you a good coach or a bad coach or a better coach or a worse coach, but he already strikes me as someone who is far more open and candid about what he wants to do from a strategy standpoint. And obviously, as a media person or a fan of the team, I think that's fun. Again, it doesn't mean he's going to be better or worse. Do you care or notice as a player when a coach maybe is more open with the media?
You know, I think as a player, you know, Laviolette kept his cards pretty tight. He wouldn't say too much to the media. So if he said something, then you knew it meant it. You knew he meant it. And, you know, when you're, you know, we'll see how Hines is, but, yeah, he seems a lot more open. And I think players will realize that. We'll see that he's going to talk to the media and he's going to explain things. And you know, sometimes it's good to get it out there. You know, you get out what, you know, get the expectations for what you're supposed to do out in the public, and people realize what the coach expects from you, and it keeps you a little bit more honest. Other times it can be too much, and then you're like, can we just keep this in the house? You know, and it can be a little bit scary when the coach will spout off to the media. So it depends on how it's done. But from everything I've heard, John Hines is very calculated and very calm. He's not going to just go spout off to the media about something. He's going to use the media the right way and be open about it.
Now, Hal, we heard what Poyo said at the press conference in regards to making a coaching change. It's not like he can, you know, do anything. You can't fire players. I mean, now you've made the change. Now it's upon the players to get the job done. If this thing continues to go the way that it has been going, and I'm not separating coach from it because I don't think this is a coaching problem right now. I think it's a player problem. Do you think they make a significant move before the trade deadline?
Well, we'll find out. Yeah, it's funny you say that because it's always the player's problem because they're the ones that have to do it. But you know, sometimes a change is all you need, a change in a message, and things just pick up and go. I really think that the Preds were just a few plays from getting their swagger back, and they had that road trip where they, you know, go to New York and get a couple wins and play really well and go into Ottawa and, you know, had an okay game and then a really good game in Boston, and I thought everything was going to turn around. And I think that can still happen, or could have still happened, but I think a different message from a different coach is going to change things around, and I think they're going to get going. So it's a player problem because they have to go out there and do it, but I do think that once you look at this team in a different light, it's a pretty good team, and I don't think you're going to want to change it.
Hal Gill joining us here, brought to you by Puckett's, and I tend to agree. I think expectations for fans should still be for this team to make the playoffs, and I think they're too talented. And you know, you look at the underlying metrics, and at 5-on-5, they're one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the NHL. They just got to fix the specialty teams, and certainly that's where John Hines was pretty good on the penalty kill in New Jersey. So there's things you point to, and you say, hey, there's a reason that this team should make the playoffs still, even where they are in the standings. My question to you is, why is it that hockey, of all sports, obviously there's a lot of games and it's, you know, it's a complicated sport, but In no other sport do you have teams firing coaches midseason and winning championships like you do in hockey. You've had four of the last 10 champions that did that. And you played for the Penguins. How does that, like why does that happen in hockey and maybe not in other sports?
Just because there's so many momentum swings in a game and in a season. You can go on a heater and just feel good about your game. And it's not like football or baseball where everything is set and everyone get ready and go. There's a lot of flow in hockey. And I feel like even in basketball, it's a set play. It's always a set play. And with hockey, there's tendencies that start to come together and, line combinations, different things that you do, adjustments to your forecheck, and then it just clicks, and then it starts to roll. And I will say, I was in Pittsburgh. We were, I think it was 25, and I was on that team with Rob Scuderi, funny enough. But we were laughing about it because we were in 11th place with, I think we had like 25 games left, and we went on a heater and won the cup. And we actually got home ice, which is crazy. We finished fourth. And you look at what St. Louis did last year, it's the way the game is. It's so fluid, and once you catch that wave, it's hard for teams to stop. That's the thing is when you're a step ahead and you feel like every time you get a pass, you have an edge on a guy, it starts to snowball and it feels better and better, and you just keep rolling with it.
Now, Hal, I don't know how surprised you were when this move was made. I think there were some people that were surprised and some that frankly felt that this should have happened earlier. Do you believe, because I do believe this is something Poyle thought about at the end of last season, the way that playoffs ended, and just was trying to give Lobby an opportunity to kind of get things back on track and see if the message, whatever message he was preaching, see if that message changed and the guys bought into it.
Yeah, I think as a GM, if you're not at the end of every season, you go, all right, what we didn't get the cup, what changes are we going to make? Even if you do get the cup, what changes are we going to make going forward? And, I think Poyle looked at it and said, I believe in Laviolette. And I really, to be honest with you, I think he did the whole way, and he wanted it to happen, and he believed in Laviolette. And then there was just too many inconsistencies where, and I honestly believe it was like, okay, I have to make this move. I think, and I said it before, I think Laviolette could have stayed here as coach and they could have caught fire but as a GM, you can't wait for it, and I think he wanted to, he couldn't wait any longer. And so, it stinks. It's part of the business because, it stinks because I think with Laviolette and with McCarthy, they could have done it. They could have turned it around, and it's maybe one game away, and that's the crazy part. But, you make a change, and you kind of force the issue and say, okay, we need to change it right now. We need to make it go right now. So it's a tough decision, but I really think Poyle has been looking at it and reassessing and then reassessing again and just finally made the decision.
How many games does it take before you sort of start to see, like, oh, that's a John Hines thing, and that's been changed, that's been tweaked? I think the timing, as we've talked about a lot, is you've got this six-game window and then the All-Star break, and that gives you some time to maybe evaluate and then adjust, and then you come back. When should fans be able to notice, like, oh, that's a new strategy or a new thing that is different now because a new guy is in charge?
I think you probably notice it tonight. I think there's certain little simple things that are going to change right away. It might be a forecheck. It might be D-zone coverage. It might be a set breakout, a power play, what they do, a penalty kill, how they do it. But it's kind of hard to throw everything in, and it sounds like he's just going to throw a little bit here, a little bit there. You go into a meeting before the game, and you you have your penalty kill meeting, your power play meeting, your five-on-five, your systems, your goalie meeting, and you go through all these things. And it'll be a little bit different on this one and then a little bit different on that one. And it slowly builds up, and then you have a full system in place. So I think, you know, you might not notice it, that the average fan might not notice a big difference. But if you look and you focus on it, you'll see, you know, a guy's going to drop off a little bit more here. A guy's going to be more aggressive here. You know, it'll be interesting to see what those changes are. And I'm excited about tonight because it'll be a real focal point for me just to see what changes are made. But it might be just line combinations as well. You know, we don't know what he's going to put out there for line combinations. And Laviolette changed his all the time. So that's not a big deal for them. So he can just go out there and change lines as he feels. And they know that it could change again. So it'll be fun to watch. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hal Gill, thank you so much, man. We do appreciate it. We'll be listening. Pregame 6:30, puck drop at 7:30, I believe, the national broadcast on TV. So, obviously, you want to listen to Pete and Hal right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks, Hal.
Yeah, where are you guys? Have a good one.
There you go. Hal Gill brought to you by Puckett's, of course. And a trivia question to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Ducks at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, January 16th. Here's the trivia question, and Marquise, we got Munson. You need to know the text line, right? We're giving these away on the text line. So the first answer, Munson is monitoring it back there. So the first answer to this question will get a pair of tickets to the Ducks game. And this question is tied into Hal Gill. Here's what I want first person to give me this answer. Hal Gill's face-off record as a professional. He played like 56 years in the NHL. It's like a long time. What was his face-off record? So, like, you know, if like Nick Bonino plays tonight and he's a center, he's gonna go like, I don't know, like 9-for-16, right? Will be his record tonight as a face-off man. What was Hal Gill's record in the face-off circle for his entire career? I want to know. First one to answer, 615-737-1025. On the text line, we'll get two tickets to the Ducks game against the Preds on January 16th. Big finish when we come back. All right, we finally got a winner for our trivia question. What was Hal Gill's record in the face-off circle? You should know how to present that to me, and the answer is not 49. You should know what record in face-off circle, how it should look statistically, numerically, in a text message. We do have a winner. We will announce that winner when we get done with this bad boy right here, the Daily Rewind. Boys, good Thursday morning. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson. I have so much energy today, it is ridiculous. I don't know why. I am pissed off for greatness, boys. How are we feeling? Are you guys going to elevate, escalate?
We're good.
Intimidate?
Accelerate. We're good.
Accelerate?
We're good.
I don't know why.
We're good. How you guys doing?
Yeah.
I'm up here, boys.
I sound like, the character on Winnie the Pooh.
What was he?
Eeyore?
Yeah, Eeyore.
You guys are Eeyore, and I'm whoever.
Yeah, we're good. Ravens and Titans. Such a great game.
Jonnu Smith, tight end for your Tennessee Titans, joining us here.
Yeah, I just feel like winning, you know, in the playoffs, there was a sense of togetherness in the locker room, a sense of relief amongst, you know, everybody, you know, inside of those walls that we walk into every day, because nobody else believed in us. Nobody thought we could get it done. And just from, you know, being there, you know, 2 years ago and being here now, you know, I just feel that same sense of brotherhood and, you know, and actually, you know, more of it. You know, I think that that's key in team games. You know, I feel like that's probably the biggest key to winning is togetherness and, you know, playing for one another. You know, that's kind of what we hang our hat on, man. You know, we're brotherhood. You know, we always, you know, make sure that we are, you know, trying our hardest for the guy next to us. And whether it be an assist play, you know, you may not even be on the play all the time, but just, you know, just being able to be selfless, man, and put the team before yourself, you know, that's something that I definitely see that we've had 2 years ago that, you know, that we have now and more of.
Joe Rexroad of The Athletic now joining us here.
I think if you're the Titans and you can get into that fourth quarter and you're right in there, I mean, the Titans have absolutely dominated the fourth quarter this year. I don't think it's a coincidence the way they play that it lends to that. And so, you know, if you can get it there and you can keep, you know, not allow that score to separate from you and you can keep playing how you want to play offensively and running the football and get to the fourth quarter, and that's when, you know, that's when the one seed tightens up a little bit. Oh, gosh, I just said tightens up. I'm sorry, guys. I use that phrase sometimes in normal language, and I'm like, oh, shoot, I said tighten up. But no, I really think that this team can do it and have a chance to win this game late. And, you know, if they win, they lose by 25 Saturday, I'll apologize. But I think people who expect a blowout here are off the mark.
Now on the program, of course, is Hal Gill.
Sometimes a change is all you need, a change in a message, and things just pick up and go. And I really think that the Preds were just a few plays from getting their swagger back, and they had that road trip where they, you know, go to New York and get a couple wins and play really well, and going to Ottawa and, you know, had an okay game and then a really good game in Boston, and I thought everything was going to turn around. And I think that still happened, or could have still happened, but I think a different message from a different coach is going to change things around, and I think they're going to get going. So it's a player problem because they have to go out there and do it, but I do think that once you look at this team in a different light, it's a pretty good team. And I don't think you're going to want to change it.
The new Predator head coach, John Hines, joining us here on the show.
That's what we told the players, that I really didn't disrupt their game day routine, just how they ran their meetings, who ran the meetings, full special teams did their thing, and 5-on-5, to me, it was more about, you know, having them go out and play, execute what they know, and let's see them really compete. And a big part, you know, of coaching is to understand the team's mentality of, you know, how do they handle the adversity in the game, how do they do on a start, what happened on certain things, when we do get a penalty and the penalty kill's got to go over, what's the reaction and feel of the team. And then the other part is it's a clean slate for the players in the sense of I want to see how guys compete, how hard they play, and do they execute the system that they were playing, what's their attention to detail. Those are all invaluable things, and I really felt, did not like the fact that we didn't win the game, but I really felt after the game that there was clear things that needed to work, and I felt better about understanding who the players are. And I think even after tonight's game, I'm going to have a better feel of the players, of who should play with who, or do we want to make tweaks in that area, who needs a strong push from me. And that's a big part of coaching too, and but you only get that through going through the process with the guy.
Family Guy, you got three daughters. I have two daughters. They are very, very young. If you can give me any advice on how to raise a household full of women, please, I'm all ears.
I hope you have a very stable wife. this weekend we were driving around. I was taking my daughter to her basketball game, and she was playing music on my iPhone and in the car, and she put on Luke Bryant. And we were just talking about different things, and she said, you know, Dad, Luke Bryant lives in Nashville. You know, did you know that? We should try to go there someday and this and that. And then, honestly, when they came back and I told them that we got the job, she jumped up and down. And she's like, I knew it. Yeah, so I'm going to go there. Came and gave me a big hug. They're tremendously excited to come. And my wife's very excited. And, you know, everything you hear about Nashville, be able to come, raise a family, the city, people in general, and even me being here for about 48 hours, you can just see everyone I've run into is so supportive. The fan base is great. Just the type of people that I've been able to meet have been fantastic. So we're certainly excited as a family.
There you have it. What a show. Jonnu Smith, John Hines. You got Joe Rexroad.
Mm-hmm. Hal.
Brought to you by Holly Garenzen, of course, and Hal Gill hanging out with us. Now, here's the thing. When I say what is someone's face-off record, I feel like people should know how to present that information. We had one answer, 49. what do you mean 49? Like 49 wins, 49 attempts, 49 losses. 49%?
49 and what?
What's the 49 percent?
And what?
When I say what's the Titans record right now, people should know how to say that, correct?
Yeah, you don't
there's
say
a microphone
nine.
Right there.
You don't
there.
Say
it's
nine.
Like 82?
You don't say nine.
What's the Titans record?
82%.
Now, we did have a lot of people get his percentage correct early on in the guessing process. Again, the trivia question: what was Hal Gill's face-off record?
Not percentage.
As an NHL player, he played like 19 seasons. He played like thousands of games, and I got a few good guesses early. 0%, which is not what I asked for, but that is technically correct. He never won a face-off in his career. Then the people started guessing 0 for 0, 0 for 0, 100%, 1 for 1, which is covering all your bases there,
uh-huh.
like that. But we did get an answer immediately following 49, which is still my favorite guess. I'm not picking on you, man. It's just my favorite guess. 49. What was Hal Gill's record in the faceoff dot?
49.
And? And so our winner was Eric Jerkanovich, I believe. Jerkanovich, I'm saying.
Close enough.
Hal Gill, so congratulations to Eric. He's going to get, I'm just going to call him Eric.
Yeah.
He's going to get two tickets to the Preds game against the Ducks on January 16th. Hal Gill was 0 for 1 in his entire career in the faceoff circle.
There you go.
0 for 1. He has more Stanley Cup rings than he did faceoff wins in his entire career.
After 19 seasons.
There you go. Big Friday for you guys tomorrow. Preds tonight again. Don't miss it. Against the Blackhawks. For Derek, for Munson, my name's Braden Gault. Thanks for listening to Morning Drive.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, stay warm, be safe, and I love ya.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.